All right, folks, welcome back to the latest Mountain West Wire podcast talking football week 10. We got some big news at the top of the show, but first, as always, Jeremy Moss hanging out with Matt Kennerly, whose Fresno State Bulldogs are now newly bowl eligible and owe Jeff Tedford six figures, so congrats to that.
Feels pretty good, the bowl eligibility part, I mean.
Yeah, exactly. But yes, check us out, mwwire.com. We're working on a few other items there with the other URL. There's GoDaddy's having some shenanigans with us. We had to figure out MWC Wire, but go to MWR.com. And hey, we have our own specific place now with looks similar as before at College Football News, but we're now going at it not on our own, but just having our own little location instead of being rolled in with all their content. So if you haven't checked that out, please do so. We'd appreciate it.
Oh, yeah.
And it looks nice. We can have a little layout fun. We can make some photos. We can. I'm finding some cool tips and tricks on WordPress, which are fun. So look out for that, folks.
And
what? Yes, go ahead.
And, you know, we might as well throw it out there now because we have some new digital digs. And I guess I'll take the lead on this. If you're interested in writing for our website, we still have some openings for teams that, you know, certain vocal parts of our fan base on Twitter, especially, have let us know why don't you have this, and well, also Boise State. You know, if you were one of those people that has asked why don't you have content for our team, we're looking for people like you or people that you know who have a passion not only for the team but a little bit of writing know-how. Mm-hmm. So by the time this podcast comes out, we should have a post up on mwwire.com to check out. But if you're interested in joining our staff, and I think we've already had at least one person who we've worked with before very briefly express an interest in doing that. If that sounds like you, someone you know, anybody you think would be good at it, we're going to be opening that up real soon.
Yeah, so just one quick note too. I'm not sure because our site technically just went officially live, I think, today, Sunday, or maybe Saturday. So there's still a few things to get a hold of us. I don't believe the comment sections are open yet, which I was kind of ticked about that on Saturday. So we'll put the post. We'll put out a contact. Basically, you could a couple ways. Like, well, it's false. I don't want the DMs open on our account because stuff happens if that's the case. So it may not be an issue. But there'll be a way to contact, whether email myself, jeremymoss@gmail.com, M-A-U-S-S, or just tag us on Twitter or something, but we'll make sure a way to contact us because unfortunately there's a few things that while we are ready to go, they're still holding off on one or two small things. Because if you look at the site now, there's a couple, not quirks, but there's a WordPress is a fickle beast, so you can't comment at the moment. So that's all I'm going to say, but there'll be ways to get a hold of us and kind of what we need real quick. Like I said, Utah State would be helpful. We don't have one guy, but we like to have more than one. Boise State, that's kind of been on me. And so, hey, for people who say we're Boise State homers, we don't really have a Boise State writer, and I've been pretty busy the past 6 weeks of being able to do previews. But I think this is correct to what we really need. If there's a team we say, because like for instance, San Diego State, we're pretty stacked that way. We have quite a few writers. But if you're an Aztec guy who wants to do Aztec football, basketball, whatever, we're still interested because more people cover the team, more coverage, more people come visit our website. It just kind of snowballs. So just because we do have better needs than others or greater needs, it's don't be turned away if we don't mention Aztec football because we have or Aztec basketball. But if you want to do it, we're open to it, right, Matt?
For sure.
So the hierarchy,
you know, because our readership, I should just mention it, our readership, our listeners, they have made this new venture of ours a success since we launched in late June.
Yes.
You know, we just recently passed 1,000 followers on Twitter, which, by the way, if you're not following us there, you should. We just recently passed 100 likes on Facebook.
We got to mention Twitter, though, Matt. MWC Wire. That's the place.
That's true. Yeah, also on Facebook, MWC Wire, we just passed 100 likes there. But, you know, we're always looking to get a little bit better, and that's what that's all about.
Yeah, and we'll do some more. Now that we're on our own site, we can – not that it was hindering before, but there'll be some more stuff we can do, video stuff and other interesting things. But here's what we really need. Air Force is always tough because Air Force basketball is not great. But here's the teams. Air Force, Boise State, and Wyoming are probably the top priority for either football and basketball.
Mm-hmm.
Utah State's pretty close. We have one rider right now who does a good job. Very busy, so we can't always do certain things. So we can split the duties. And I guess Nevada, maybe. Well, no, we're good in Nevada. But those are probably the teams we need the most. Air Force, Boise, Wyoming, and Utah State. San Jose State, if you want to do that, that'd be great. We have Anna, but she's moving to the East Coast, so she can't do as much because she's been at every game for football. Goes to a press conference every week, so we need somebody to not necessarily do what she's been doing, but to help out more. If you're on the East Coast watching San Jose State basketball at midnight, I feel for you, and I know she probably will still watch some, but still, it's late. It's late night, man. It's hard to do. And with them not expected to be great with like Brandon Clark transferring and new head coach, but we'll have the post out, so check it out. But those are kind of the schools you want. If you want to just hit us up on Twitter, MWC Wire, Facebook, Mountain West Wire. We check our messages, whether it's a Facebook messenger, just a comment. Let us know. And we're still kind of new at this, but there's a few bucks to be able to be had. We're still working out exactly who's getting what, but it just won't be voluntarily, but also won't be a full-time job either, if that makes sense. Like yeah. Me and Matt say, guacamole and lunch money, essentially. Maybe a tad more if things go well, but we'll see.
Yeah, just slide into the DMs like Drew Van Manen laying out for a catch in the snow.
Oh, jeez. Snow games, those are the best. We'll get to that later. Snow football is the best, right?
Yes.
All right, so let's get to we'll talk bowl stuff in between each game because I'm doing my bowl projection post right now, which should be up. My eyes do not deceive me. There could be eight bowl eligible teams in the conference. Eight.
Yeah, and, you know, week 10, we have five teams that are now in the race. You got one team, unexpectedly probably, that's one win away. A couple of teams that need a little bit of help at 4 and 5, and then a couple of other teams that, if they win out, they could play their way into bowl eligibility. So a lot of maneuvering left to do in these last few weeks.
Yeah, we'll get to those in each game, but we got the newly, as I mentioned, Fresno, Wyoming's now bowl eligible. But let's get to the games here. Let's start off with the first one, Army and Air Force. Oh, Air Force.
That game did not go well.
They lost 21-0. I believe, and also really quick, the Air Force Twitter account that said this was a heartbreaker of a loss. Come on. It was not. You lose by 3 touchdowns. I get it's a heartbreaker. Maybe you lose to your rival, you're favored. But the outcome was not a heartbreaker. Heartbreaker's losing on a 55-yard field goal with no time left. That's a heartbreaker.
You know what it was? It was that it was 14-0 until like late in the fourth quarter. But it never really felt like it was that close.
You're right. It did not. And part of it was like we mentioned this during the preview show. Like, and also it doesn't help when missed field goals are had. Both teams missed field goals. But look at, I could almost fit the drive chart at one without scrolling down very much on ESPN.com. We mentioned before, like, we weren't joking. There might be, like, six first half possessions, like, eight overall. There were 11 possessions in this game. Technically, well, one less because Army took a knee with one on one play. So that one doesn't even really count. There are few and far chances for Air Force to score when they're down by even just 14 points. And, you know, it's interesting, too, like, looking at, the play-by-play and everything, like, what they're doing on every single drive, like, Air Force did not have a 3-and-out the whole game.
They had 1 3-and-out.
Okay, the very end. Sorry, I must have been listening to that part before the end of the game. They had 1 3-and-out, but, like, they weren't moving the ball well, but they also weren't being, like, stuffed. But we mentioned previously during the preview, there's an alliteration there, you and I said, like, this Army defense is legit. We weren't, at least I wasn't really buying it because who they beat. But they held Air Force to ground game pretty much. This was their they dominated on defense. Air Force was just dominated this Army did. Excuse me. They had 89 yards in this game. And did you happen to check my note to recap of the last time this happened? They had fewer than 100 yards.
I did not see that. Rather, no.
I was looking around because there's all sorts of stats that were broken. We'll get to all those. But this one was. I'm looking there like it's got to be. You would think it's a long time since they had 100 yards. Not rush for 100 yards if I could speak tonight. You have to go back to 2008. And when they were playing University of Utah, who ended up being number 2 in the country that year, won the Sugar Bowl, beat Alabama. They held Air Force to, I'm trying to pull up right here, I think it was 58 yards on the ground, 53 rushing yards in a 30-23 loss. So somehow they still scored 23 points, but rushed for 53 yards. And that's a span of, I think, 112 games, I want to say. And then also, did you know Army has also actually been pretty good against this defense? I think they've held them under 160 yards like 5 out of the past 10 years. Like every other year, they shut them down to under like 160.
Well, okay, so if you look at the last couple of years, like they in 2015, they held Air Force to like a little over 4 yards a carry. Last year in their loss, it was
four point eight yards per carry. Careful that stat there, Matt.
Oh, let's not get into that. but if you look at, because, you know, part of it, yes, they had a win streak going on. They've won five in a row now. But during the four games coming into this streak, and especially in the last 3 weeks where they basically had to escape Eastern Michigan and Temple, you wouldn't necessarily think of either of those teams as being especially effective running the ball. But they had given up over 5 yards a carry in each of the last three games. And so my thinking going into this game was that both of these teams would be able to create huge chunks of yardage to be, you know, kind of equally efficient to one another. So naturally, of course, you know, Army puts up the best defensive performance it's put up all year. You know, they not only shut out the Air Force on the ground, like they held them to 2.8 yards per carry on the ground. And like, that's just the kind of thing that, you know, especially in this particular matchup, I just didn't really even see it coming. And it wasn't as though they dominated on tackles for loss. Like, they did have five, and they did create 30 yards worth of losses on actually, those tackles for loss.
Include sack yards, actually 50.
Yeah. So, I guess if you, you know, I just didn't really even see it coming.
This is historically bad. This is the second time in a decade they played this bad on the ground.
Yeah, because if you look at the numbers, like, you know, you expect a few big plays, but when you look at chunk plays on the ground, especially, Army had like 9 plays of more than 10 yards on the ground, which, by the way, they didn't throw the ball once in this game. And Air Force had, what, 34 carries as a team? Maybe 32 if you want to take away the sacks. But they only had 3 plays more than 10 yards on the ground. And that, I think, is just kind of the biggest difference in this game. But more than that, if you look at what these two teams did on third downs especially, like, Army on offense especially, they continually put themselves not only in position to succeed, but, you know, that 10 of 12 that you see when you look at third down conversions, they were putting themselves in third and short over and over again. Like, the very first touchdown that they had was a 21-yard run from Ahmad Bradshaw on 3rd and 7. But if you go through and keep looking at, you know, the third down chart, you know, it's 3rd and 3, 3rd and 1, 3rd and 1, 3rd and 1. Like, they had basically like 1 3rd and long the entire game. And when you compare that to what Air Force was able to do, it was kind of a tale of two halves. Like, in the first half, they were continually putting themselves in more obvious passing situations, which I don't think it's any shock to say that that's not Air Force's strength. But then even later in the game, after halftime, when they were putting themselves in more positions to succeed, you know, they were 3 of 11 on the game, but there were, you know, 3 third and longs in the first half that didn't help cause. And they had 4 different 3rd and 3 situations in the second half, and they didn't convert a single one. And you have to think that, you know, if they can convert at least one of those situations, extend a drive at some point, that the tenor of this game maybe is a little bit different, that they look a little more competitive than they ultimately were.
Well, they had a chance. In the Army went down for a 16-play drive, one of their many drives, 10:45 or 10:42. They go. Air Force makes a stop on 4th and 3. It's 3rd and 4, and there is windy there, so they're probably up 14-0. I was like, well, let's go for the kill, essentially, later in the game. This was I forget what time, but yeah, they went for it in 3rd and 4, didn't get it. Went for it on 4th and 3, they made a stop. Okay, Air Force gets the ball at their own 22. They go on a pretty good drive, 13 plays, but then they ended up getting nothing. 4th and 1 at the 16. Did you see that 4th and 1 pass play to Tim McVay?
No, I think I had switched channels by then.
So this play, oh my gosh, this was the most. I wish I had it for a highlight reel that I put together, but I kind of forgot about it. So 4th and 1, they just had to pass. I'm like, okay, sure, why not? You know what I mean? Why go for it? Something different. You're down 14-0. You know possessions are minimal, so a field goal does nothing for you. 14-3. It's like, whatever. Start of the fourth quarter. Worthman does a little play action. The pressure's on. He runs, skirts around, does like a big old half loop, horseshoe size on the field loop to turn around, and then just chucks it. It was far enough, like not in the end zone, but it had been like a maybe a 5-yard game kind of floater. McVay tried to dive to get it, falls through his hands. It was like the weirdest pass play ever, where he chucks it for like 5 yards after going like 10 yards behind the line of scrimmage being chased. Mm-hmm. And so that was their chance. They drove down the field. Had they got a touchdown there, maybe things would have been different, but then Army goes down and scores a touchdown and wraps up the game 21-0. There was no coming back from that when you're down. Even 14-0, it seemed tough, but that was their chance to get into the end zone, and they didn't get done, and now they lose. Now they're out of the Commander-in-Chief trophy officially, and they're sitting at 4-5, and if they want a bowl game, they need to win two of the last three, and they got to host Wyoming, which is looking better, at Boise, which is looking really good, than hosting Utah State, who we'll see. You know what I mean? Aggies are hit or miss this year.
Yeah, I mean, they just didn't look characteristically disciplined overall. You know, there was one drive late. It was actually their last drive before halftime, I believe, where, you know, they're driving. They're at about midfield on a 2nd and 8, and they get called for intentional grounding.
Oh, and yeah, so, on the halfback pass or something, right? Wasn't that what it was?
I think so, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, like, they from 2nd and 8 at the Army 48, they move backwards to their own 34. You know, whoops, because they have the intentional grounding, and then Arian Werthmann fumbles on 3rd and 14. And then when they set up to punt, they take a delay of game. And so they basically go backwards at that point. But then, you know, even more than that, there was, you know, earlier in this, I believe it was in the second quarter, there was one, I think it was the first down play where they're at midfield right around. And if Werthmann hits Ryan Reffitt down the seam, it's an easy 6 points because, you know, the tight end had gotten behind the coverage and he just overthrew him. And, you know, it's, you know, the big things that didn't help, you know, like the third down, you know, troubles that they had. But it was those like little opportunities that don't always show up on the score sheet that ultimately made a difference in this game as well.
So what do you think their chances are making a bowl game now? Because had they beat Army, they've been 5-4, just need one victory. What do you say their chances are? Again, they're hosting Wyoming, hosting Utah State, and travel to Boise. Who they have beat? Remember, they have beaten Boise 2 years in a row.
I don't know, because, I mean, I would have thought that, I mean, I still feel like they're probably the most unpredictable team in the division, if only because I still think they're extremely dangerous. Like, I feel like for as well as Army played, that this was more of an outlier than anything, because, you know, if they can win out, that puts them at what, 7-5?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know, if they can get some help from, let's say, Fresno State in the last week of the season, it's still not out of the realm of possibility that they can sneak up and win the division. Like, they still have plenty of things to play for.
Yeah.
You know, because if they beat Boise and Fresno beats Boise, both of those teams have 2 losses, and there's an outside chance that the Falcons can steal the Mountain Division. You know, if they can beat Wyoming too, like, you know, they'll have the tiebreaker on them as well. So I guess if I had to put it on a scale of 1 to 100, just to get to 6 wins, I would put it at, I don't know, 30%, because we know Wyoming's a pretty good team. We know that they can play a little defensively. You know, we know Fresno State's pretty good against the run, and we, you know, we'll talk more about Boise in a minute, but, you know, they seem to have had their number, but Boise's kind of playing on a different level right now. So we'll have to wait and see.
2 quick notes before we move on. Right now, FBI, Air Force, has a 53.9% chance to beat Wyoming, only 16% to beat Boise, 63% chance to beat Utah State. And right now, the early line is out. They have Air Force by a field goal at home over Wyoming.
So they're basically even.
Yeah, so.
Interesting.
There's a decent chance. So, all right, let's move on to the next game here. We got to kind of hustle through. Got a bunch of these here. What's next? Utah State, New Mexico, where fumbles ruled the day.
Where nobody seemed to want to win this game.
But yet Utah State won by 2 touchdowns, 24-10.
Is it me, or is it kind of a miracle that Utah State got to 24 points?
It is. They're like, Jordan Love, we were correct predicting that he would be the quarterback. He had an interception. But you're right. Like, look at what they did offensively. Like, they didn't run the ball very well. They only had, what, 250 total yards offensively?
Yeah, I mean, some of that had to do with the fact that they only ran 48 plays compared to New Mexico, which ran 79 plays.
Well, part of it, too, those 4 fumbles that they were – all those fumbles they lost in the short field. So, but – well, yes and no, because you get 4 – where were they? Plus – was it only 4? Yeah, 4. So they're plus 4 on the turnover, or plus 3. the amount of plays is surprising. That hurts you for if you're going for total yards, if you like that stat, but when you're getting shorter fields. But Utah State, like, I joked to one of my – I did a top six plays of the weekend. Like, Utah State had a long running play, so I put that high with LaJuan Hunt's 65-yarder. But they were not impressive moving the ball at all because, again, you take away that big running play, they have, like, 60 yards rushing the ball.
Mm-hmm.
They did it in 114 passing. And then, again, look at that. They had 131-yarder to run Quavion Tarver. So, like, take away those two big plays, that's, like, half their offense. 96 yards in two plays, and they had, what, two, if my math's right, 233? Is that something like that?
Yeah, sounds about right.
That's ridiculous. Two plays accounted for half your offense? I'm like, okay, sure.
Yeah, I mean, like, I and when you look at some of these other numbers, too, like, obviously the turnovers are the big story. But, you know, New Mexico held a fairly sizable advantage in being able to move the chains as well. Like, they were 6 of 17 on third downs. Utah State was just 2 of 11.
Neither are good.
I mean, 6 of 17 is not great. It's passable, I guess. Mm-hmm. I would say. But Utah State was just, like, putting themselves constantly in third and long or third and mid, and they just weren't doing anything. And a lot of that comes down to Jordan Love, who... You know, we had questions. I think I was a little more dubious about whether he would make a difference. And, like, when you look at what he was able to do on third downs especially, like, he was only 4 of 10 on throwing on third downs. He only converted 2 third downs on the entire day. It's just, you know, kind of an ugly game. I mean, a win is a win, and I'm sure Utah State mm-hmm. fans aren't complaining too much.
They're 5-5, yeah.
That's true. But,
well, actually, like, it depends how much you like Matt Wells.
That's true. I mean, but I just, like, this game doesn't make me feel any better about the offense as a whole, I guess that's what I'm saying.
No, defense did okay. They had a fumble recovery for a touchdown. They were actually, sorry, they were plus 2 overall because Utah State had a fumble, but he forced 4 fumbles, and that's what this defense does. I think they're now at, shit, I don't have it in front of me, but what does that make them now? 24 takeaways on the year, I believe?
Something. Give me a moment and I will look that up.
Something ridiculous. I know they've been way better than last year where they're plus 10, but, like, the offense isn't going to get them any games. Yeah, LaJuan Hunt had 117 two scores, but again, that one super long run. But then look at the Lobos. Their offense wasn't that great. Jordan led the way rushing. Tyron Owens only had 44 yards. They went to the they played Tuiati and Lamar Jordan, so I don't know what they're doing at quarterback right now. They threw 22 freaking times. That's too much for this team. But I guess if the running game's not working, you gotta. I don't know. You gotta. They ran so. I don't know. It's just. The Slow Boys team's not the same. I guess missing Tyron Owens and stuff like that really hurt them.
Well, I mean, not only that, but, you know, we talked a little bit on Twitter yesterday about how they just weren't getting the explosive plays that made them so dangerous last year.
Yeah.
Because, you know, before halftime, when it was still rather competitive, like, they only had one run of more than 10 yards. They ended up with 6 overall on the day, but that was mostly when they were playing catch up. You know, they had, I think, 3 on one drive in the third quarter, and I'm trying to see what they actually did in that drive. I think they ended up kicking a field goal that they missed. So
good job.
So it wasn't just turnovers. Like, you know, they had these opportunities. They were creating some plays late and they just weren't, you know, taking full advantage of that. I don't know that at this point in the season that there's any real easy fix for that.
It's hard. Like, they've had the past 4 years or so, just big play after big play, but they're sitting at 3-6. The odds of making the bowl game are extremely slim. But after Utah State, let's just stick with them before we wrap up here. They're 5-5. They need one victory. They have 2 games left because they have a bye this week, and then they play Hawaii and then go to Air Force. I think they could win both of them. Well, I think they could win one of those games. I think Hawaii is the best chance to win.
Yeah, I mean, we'll talk more about the Warriors in a minute. They haven't looked like quite the same team that they were in the first month of the season in the last couple of weeks. So if I had to put money on the Aggies winning one of those two games, I would pick them holding serve at home for sure.
Exactly, I would agree. And right now, FPI agrees with you, 86% chance to beat Hawaii. A decent 37% chance to beat up on Air Force there. So let's move on. There's nothing more to talk about this game. We don't need to drag every game out for 20 minutes. So let's move on to, what do you want to talk about next? Is Hawaii UNLV, I guess?
Yeah, 31-20. Let's do that.
31-23 victory for the Rebels, who did have Amari Rodgers appear in this game. He was cleared to practice, as we mentioned. We weren't sure if he'd play. It was him and Johnny Stanton, who, again, 2 weeks ago was playing linebacker. Had the hot hand, and at halftime, Coach Tony Sanchez mentioned, well, we want Stanton because he was doing better. And I'm glad they made a decision. Like, some teams in this conference go back and forth, back and forth. They stuck with Stanton for the second half, and he looked pretty good. He ended up with 18-26, which is really good, a pair of touchdowns. Running game looked pretty well with Lexington Thomas, and Stanton had a rushing touchdown. So he looks to be the guy who, I don't know what they'll do with Rodgers, if they're going to stick with Stanton, because David Deason shot to make a bowl game as well. And there, we'll get into it in a minute. There's a scenario where they can it's out there, but not extremely out there, where they could still win the division at the West. But Stanton looked pretty good as Hawaii defense. And Hawaii, I think with Hawaii, while Drew Brown had 269 yards, did you see he threw 47 times?
Yes, I did.
That's a lot.
It is. And, you know, they did have, you know, manage a couple of big plays, like Keelan Iwaliko, had a 37-yard catch that I believe set up a score of some kind. I can't remember exactly.
But yeah, they had three big plays, yeah.
I still feel like there's a hangover effect from losing Ursua, because, yeah, he threw 47 times, but he really only completed 50% of his passes, which is, you know, a little bit below where you would expect him to be. And I think that, you know, throwing the ball over the field against this UNLV secondary isn't the worst idea in the world. They just weren't able to take full advantage of that.
Yeah, it's I think you're right. It's like running the ball, they did fine. Like, St. Just had 111 yards, not bad. Like, the yardage was there, but Dylan Colley looks to be the guy to step up. Like, they had three guys over 50 yards, which is pretty good, but they're just Ursua is just like a once in a but he's an all conference wide receiver. Mm-hmm. Like, he's a guy where you miss it. It's like, what if Colorado State does have Michael Gallup or Keyshawn Johnson of Fresno or Cedric Wilson of Boise State? Those are all huge losses, and there's nobody who can replicate that performance or production. And so you got to give credit to UNLV, but there's just Ursura had 200 yard games before the season ended for him with that knee injury.
Well, and here's the other thing too. There were those two field goal drives that Hawaii had late in the first half where they were moving the ball fairly well. Like, they got to the UNLV 14 and the UNLV 21, but they had to settle for three instead of seven. And when you consider that, you know, UNLV basically every time they got into the red zone, they basically punched it in for six, excepting their last touchdown or field goal drive, rather.
Which is a little bit different for the Rebels. Normally they settle for field goals.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't think there's necessarily blame to place anywhere on that, but that's one of those things where, you know, UNLV struggled at times to, you know, punch it in for six and having to settle for three. In this particular game, you kind of saw the opposite, where the offense was able to maximize its opportunities. And, you know, when you consider the difference between three and six, that's basically the margin in this game.
Yeah, well, they actually had three field goals in the red zone they kicked. They had that one late in the game, too. And then also, don't forget the fumble recovery on the kickoff where UNLV scored a touchdown on a quick 10-play, three-minute drive. They recovered the kickoff and scored again to go up. Instead of being 21-13, Hawaii had the ball 28-13 in that third quarter. What's the difference? 21 points. They scored on three straight possessions for UNLV in the fumble recovery, and that's kind of the difference in the game. You got to protect the ball and, like, give credit to Hawaii for responding with the touchdown and then holding them to a field goal, the UNLV, after that. But, again, you get to the – one of the field goals was a 10-yard – to the 10-yard line. Were they all three – they were all three red zone field goals, correct? Yeah. Well, 21.
From the 21.
Okay, close get enough. One touch. Here's the thing. You get one or two touchdowns, like get a touchdown on one of those, that makes a difference in the game. Who knows which touchdown it was, but three field goals, you're that close. That's where you miss Ursua, who's a receiver who can catch those things in the end zone. So it's they couldn't finish drives, and that's a big thing when they're going 49% completion with Drew Brown. And Rebels' defense is pretty – they're shown to be good. They shut down Fresno State and beat them on the ground game. They've been doing quite well, but this is a Hawaii team where – you got to get your chances. Like, we harped on UNLV and they played Howard and other teams, and even Fresno, where they started off with multiple field goals. They came back and got the victory in one of those games, but finishing drives, that's what you got to do. If you want to be a good team, you can't just stutter at the 10-yard line.
Yeah, and I mean, beyond that, too, like, I think that, is this team starting to turn a corner a little bit? Because
Rebels, you mean?
Because we've talked a lot about Devontae Boyd, but it was really Brandon Presley who's continued to impress in a lot of, you know, a lot the same way that he's done in the last month. I think this was his career high in receiving yardage. He had 4 catches for 95 yards, including that really nice catch and run on a slant. That was, mm-hmm. you know, once he had it, he was off to the races on that. But, you know, this was probably a better game played by the secondary than it, you know, than the upset that they had versus Fresno State. Because if you look at the pass breakups especially, you know, Jericho Flowers had 10 tackles, but he also had 3 pass breakups and he forced a fumble. Robert Jackson had a couple pass breakups. Dalton Baker had a pass breakup. I think you're starting to see a little something in the kind of caliber defense this could be in the long run. You know, it was a vulnerable offense, and they did have some, you know, Hawaii does still have some playmakers. Like, we can't forget that St. Juiced did go for over 100 yards and a score. But I feel like UNLV is finally starting to, like, to be the kind of team that they could be in a year or two. Like, they're starting to show a little more consistency. Their defense is playing a lot better in the last couple weeks than they were earlier in the season. And I feel like there's a lot of encouragement if you're a Rebels fan.
There should be. I'm wondering, you mentioned Devontae Boyd. I know him and Armani Rogers hooked up quite a bit. He did get banged up a couple weeks ago. I think the same week he had a concussion for Rogers. So I'm wondering if that maybe is still hindering, because he sat out for at least a quarter plus, or at least a quarter in that game. So who knows if that's the case. But here's a quick note real quick from our good buddy Tyler Bischoff. How UNLV can win the West Division. You tell me if this is extremely far-fetched or not. They need to beat New Mexico and Nevada. I think that's possible, right? Here's where it gets tricky. Well, I'll go. Yeah. Well, that's possible. Then you have Fresno State losing to Hawaii and Boise State or Wyoming. So I'm like, okay. I don't know if they'll lose to Hawaii, but I could see Fresno losing to Boise or Wyoming. That's possible. Here's where it gets real far fetched. Okay. San Diego State losing to Nevada. I don't see that happening.
Yeah, that's asking a lot right there.
That's the one that gets you. That's the one.
Yeah, I have no idea if that's going to happen, but probably not.
Probably not. I know Nevada has potential score points, not as much last week, but not against that San Diego State defense, which is probably them and Boise defense are in the same neighborhood, and so Boise held them pretty well. So, but bowl eligibility seems likely for Rebel. Well, here's the thing, man. You beat Howard, you don't have to worry about this garbage. You know what I mean? It's like, come on. Lose to Howard.
Yeah. Because
they host BYU Friday night. I think they can beat BYU, who has a backup quarterback now. And we'll talk about that in the Fresno game. And then they also have, really quick, as we'll move on here, as the other two games we mentioned, at New Mexico. That's a maybe, because, like you said, Lobos are inconsistent up and down. At Nevada, which, if that Nevada team scores points, maybe. But I could see UNLV getting a bowl game, getting to 6 victories on the year.
Oh, for sure. For sure. I mean, if they keep playing the same way that they played the last couple of weeks, you know, this is a team I think that's starting, like I said, they're starting to grow into themselves a little bit. And so I don't think it's unlikely to say that they could, you know, run the table from here on out.
Ooh. All right. Did you know right now, really quick, when they host BYU, they're a 4-point favorite at the moment?
That sounds about right.
That can't make BYU fans happy, but I don't think anything can. I think they're waiting for basketball or something. all right, next game. What do you want to go next? What's next on your lineup here?
Let's talk about Boise State, Nevada.
Do we need to make amends, or do I, or something? Is that how this works?
Well, we can start there.
Okay. I don't think. Okay, I'm not gonna. It's not gonna be like a backhanded compliment. We said Boise State's been good, and we said last week the October we saw them have is what we thought they'd be all year. We both said that, not just you. It was me as well. Where they've been playing much better. Here's the thing, though. Nevada's been just putting up points. I know. CSU's defense isn't very good. Air Force defense isn't great, but they've been putting up 100 points in 3 games. I would assume they could cover 22 points or whatever the spread was. And so they did it, and it happens. Like, come on, what do you want from me? I know Boise's really good, but I thought Nevada could find some holes, because Boise State's defense a few times this year have given up points, like UVA, Washington State. So I kind of figure with what Washington State does, Nevada's sort of similar in scheme-wise, that they can keep it close, but that Nevada defense is just awful.
I think when you consider the opponent, you know, we talked a lot about strengths versus strengths coming into this game, which is why I thought that Nevada would be able to, you know, create a few more plays than they actually did. I feel like when you consider the opponent, when you consider what Nevada has been able to do, especially in the last few weeks in conference play, this is the best performance that Boise State's secondary has put up all year long.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they, you know, Ty Ganji did complete, you know, 24 of 37, but, you know, they created three interceptions, which is not something that a lot of teams have been able to do in conference play. I think he came into the game having thrown only four interceptions in the previous four games. So that's a huge credit to Nevada, you know, to force him into, you know, to bad throws. Like I believe the Kekoa Nawahini interception especially was not a great decision on Ganji's part. But, you know, Tyler Horton, who we haven't really talked about a lot this year, you know, showed up and made an interception. And, you know, the guys who were the starting corner now, DeAndre Pierce and Avery Williams, like, they both stepped up and they basically held this offense in check. You know, I think it kind of surprised me a little bit, at least, to see that Kelton Moore was the first guy to run for 100 yards against this defense all year long.
Whoa.
But when you consider what this offense really wants to do, they want to throw the ball. They want, like, the deep strike. And so when you're talking about basically holding Nevada to two plays of more than 15 yards through the air, that's a huge win for them. Like, this is like this was a statement, I think, to the rest of the conference.
Yeah, and they are, like, they're the best team. And, like, we said it last week, our power pool said that as well. They've been the best team since, well, past couple weeks. Since CSU started struggling, because we started questioning them when they give all those points to Nevada. Like, well, are they really that good? Is that what's going on? But they struggle. Boise has not. And then really quick, I'm hoping, I think the CFB stats, they should have updated. It is correct. Okay. So I was checking something here because you mentioned how the Boise secondary, the interceptions. So I went to go look about what they had on pass breakups or defended passes. Mm-hmm. So they lead the conference and passes defended with 46, mm-hmm. and also broken up. So PBUs. So I'm like, all right, how does this work on a per game basis? They had zero pass breakups and zero pass defended in this Nevada game, which is the only time all year that happened. I know they did three picks, which makes up for a PBU, but out of every game they had, this was the first game they didn't have any.
Just that is a little unusual.
It is interesting. And I checked CFB stats. I'm checking right now over at Stat Broadcast, the official stats, just to make sure no breakups, just interceptions, no PBUs, or even no QB hurry. So I'm like, all right, I just want to double check, but that's kind of just an interesting note. So I'm like, okay.
Well, and more than that, like, I think that we both expected Boise State to, you know, create big plays of their own against a Nevada defense that, charitably, still a work in progress. But, you know, this is, you know, this was basically the Brett Rippon show. Like, he continued to have the hot hand with, you know, 20-27, 258 yards, two scores. And, you know, he even caught a pretty impressive looking pass as well.
He did. So it's this is the Brett Rippon we wanted all year. Like, here's the thing. Cedric Wilson had more passing yards than Montel Cozart. So that tells you something. Two of two. But, yeah, two touchdowns, 250 yards. Just, like, take away the two other quarterbacks, you'd figured, okay, good game. They threw for 339 overall. But maybe it's like what we mentioned last week, that maybe he's finally understanding their role where – or maybe the coaches as well. Everybody's finally on the same page that here's when Rippett's going to play, here's when Kozart's going to play, and they finally realize when they come out, it's not like it was versus Troy or other games where they're coming in and out at various points. They're coming in at strategic times, and typically Kozart's coming in when he gets closer to the end zone. Mm-hmm. And they figured out, like, okay, they're not worried. Okay, they know they're coming out, and they'll get their chance back in. I think that's part of it, too. They figured out where they're going to be on the field and when and why they're coming in or coming out.
Yeah.
And then also really quick, it was just the first half, 31-14. Game wasn't really that close. At that point, Boise just cruised in the second half, and their defense smothered Nevada for the victory.
Well, and one other note that I think we should make a note of, like, Nevada's had a lot of issues to work on the defensive side of the ball, but, you know, they also lost a Sony Rufus in this game, which I don't think is going to help matters. Like, I believe he broke his leg, and he's going to miss the rest of the year, according to Chris Murray over at the Reno Gazette Journal. Just, you know, it's a, you know, it's, I don't want to say it's a pun or anything like that, but it's just a bad break for a unit that I think really needed him to contribute.
It's, yeah, he's one of their athletes, and I saw him getting carted off the field. I don't remember what happened. I just knew it was a leg injury, but broken leg, that's tough. And also, one last note, I guess I'll do one more after your one more. The Nevada rushing attack held Boise pretty low. They had the touchdowns, but no really big plays, and Madison only had 64 yards. Three touchdowns, but like compared to what Boise's been doing and what Nevada's been giving up, that's kind of surprising a little bit.
Yeah, yes and no. Like, they didn't necessarily blow the doors off of Nevada on the ground. But, you know, he was pretty steady. Like, you know, Madison he only had 64 yards, but he did average 5 yards a carry. So, you know, he did have a couple of nice runs. It wasn't, you know, the best performance he's had in the last month, but I think he still did obviously more than enough to be a difference in this game.
So, all right, is ready to move on to the next one?
Yeah, let's
next
do it.
Matchup? All right, so what's next? Is it the Fresno game, or we still got a few more in between here?
Well, we got to talk about the Border War.
Oh, that's right. Sorry, Snow Bowl? Snow game? Snow...
Yeah.
I love snow football. It's the best. There's nothing beats it. And then this game, like, started off with wind, heavy rain, and then thick snow in the second half. And then there's always the little side note. This is the first time in 8 years outside of at any time they had to snow the sidelines, or not sideline, but the yard lines, in almost a decade. I'm like, okay, that's cool, but there was a snow... Go ahead.
I was just going to say, Colorado State fans not happy.
They should not be happy. This game was terrible.
Because, I'm just looking at, not even just the team, but like the writers who cover the team seem to be not happy either.
Dude, they're always salty. No, they're always up. They have always something in their craw. I don't care. They always seem to have something going on.
No, I mean, I think it's just in this particular instance, like, I feel like it's really telling somehow. Because, like, Mike Brohard, for instance, who writes for the Loveland Reporter Herald, Colorado State football has big game shortcomings. You know, that's something that, you know, more than
one
writer for the team has covered in the last few teams or last few weeks. You know, because, yes, this was another rivalry game loss for the Rams. But, like, did you see this headline from Kelly Lytle at the Coloradoan?
Oh, what did he go with?
CSU football proves too soft to be a champion. And I'm like, damn, son. Because, I mean, yes, they lost this game. But, I mean, didn't this offense, or this defense rather, do basically everything it could do to win this game? Like, would you agree or disagree with that?
Yeah, you know what I blame on this game, honestly? Like, Who's their OC? Who's the OC there?
Friend.
Is he calling the plays, or is Mike Bobo calling the plays?
Off the top of my head, I'm not sure.
They did not throw the ball. I don't know what the deal was. They were not. Okay, Nick Stevens, still my opinion, best quarterback of the conference. I think he's played that well for the most of the year. Not this game, obviously, but overall, I'd still put him at the number one. Rippin's coming on close a little bit. Allen's gotten a little better, but there were times like 4th and 8. Let's run the ball. Why were they not getting the ball? Like, every time the announcers, let's get Michael, like, more than two or three in a snow situation. Get Michael Gallup on a quick bubble screen or a quick wide receiver quick pass. Let's see what he can do in open field. They were not throwing the ball one bit. There was like a 4th and 8. They had like 3rd and 8, 4th and 8. They decided to run the ball. I know it was too long for a field goal because the conditions, but they did not throw the ball. I know Wyoming's defense is good, but there were situations where they just didn't even try to throw the ball. Like 3rd and 8, okay, I get it. They figured we're probably not going to kick a field goal no matter what. Let's get maybe 4 yards. Get something 4th manageable. I forget what quarter this was, but second half, clearly the snow. But 4th and 7, they run the ball like 2 yards. Why were they running the ball every single time? Pass the ball. You have the best receiver in the conference. Get him the ball in space right away. See what he can do. He only had 4 passes for 29 yards. Get him the ball. That was my main issue. They just did not try to throw the ball in the second half one bit.
I mean, I don't know if that's necessarily accurate, because if you look at the drive chart, you know, there was 4th and 9 late in the third quarter where, oddly enough, it was 14 plays, 44 yards, time of possession, 9 minutes. But, you know, it was 4th and 8. They're at the Wyoming 28, and they do throw the ball. And they complete it to Warren Jackson for 13
yards. Yeah, that
guy
was wide open. Okay, there's one example. That guy's wide open, but why on 4th and 11?
It was 4th and 8. I didn't know if that's what you're referring to.
No, the one after that. No, I got that one. I remember that pass. Jackson was super open. But then 4 plays later, 4th and 11 at 16. It's 10-9. Maybe I've got my two plays mixed up here, but is that a good enough for a field goal? They had loss of 9 on that play, on a run. Like, I think that was a running play, wasn't it?
I honestly can't remember off the top of my head.
Whatever it was, it's like you're at the 16-yard line, you're down one, or you're up one, excuse me, why not kick a field goal there?
I mean, in retrospect, that's probably the biggest what if in this game, because on the very next drive, going into the fourth quarter,
they get to
the Wyoming 9, they stall, they kick a field goal to go up 13-9. And, you know, if they had
they forced a fumble the next play again. They go 6 plays. They get to the 35. Maybe this is the one I'm referring to. Here's the one I'm looking at. They get the fumble. They're down 3. Or excuse me, they're up 4. Sorry, I'm looking at the wrong draft chart. They give it to Rashard Bodie, who's – how many carries did he have in this game? Not many. They give it to him on 4th and 6. Pass the ball. 4th and 6, pass the ball. I know people may not expect the run to happen, but pass the ball.
So here's why I think here's what I think. I think that for the most part in this game, you know, especially when the snow was coming down, you know, the running game was really what led them, you know, it helped them keep the ball, first of all, more often than not. And Dalen Dawkins was really the guy who carried the offense in this game. Like, he had over 150 yards. He averaged 5 yards a carry. And when you look at the play-by-play in that second half, you could see he was, you know, fairly consistent as far as moving the ball. You know, especially on that drive leading up to that play, you know, 1st and 10 at midfield, he runs for 7 yards, and then he runs for 3 yards to convert a first down. You know, maybe if they get a few more yards on 1st and 2nd down as opposed to throwing, you know, that incomplete pass to Dedrick Clark, maybe they just needed to keep leaning on that running game, because to that point, I think it had been working more often than not. You know, that was basically what enabled them to put together a 69-yard drive for that field goal, which preceded it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think you could look at any number of decisions and kind of second guess it. But I think
it just seemed to me like the obvious passing plays was not the case. Like, maybe I'm just looking at those particular plays, but when it's 4th and 8, 4th and 6, pass the ball. Like, and then also, well, I'll let you finish up here, but you give it, you say Dawkins. Why they give it to Body on 4th and 6? Give it to your guy on 4th down. Why are you going to the 3rd string running back?
I think it's because we know that Rashard Body is their big physical guy. Like,
yeah,
I
but
think
it's if, 4th and 6. It's not 4th and 1. It's 4th and 6.
That's true. I just, you know what I think? Because especially when the snow began to fall in the second half, it seemed like Colorado State had a lot of success just attacking Wyoming right up the gut. And so, you know, 4th and 6 may seem a little long for a running attempt, but I think that's what they had in mind, is just being able to, you know, get to the second level against a Wyoming front four that, you know, had some successes in the game, but, you know, also was getting pushed around a little bit in the second half. So I think they were counting on the offensive line to come through and create a hole, and it just didn't work out that way.
It's true, yeah, but I just, again, I don't know. I just think, like, Nick Stevens, he's a great quarterback. But then, like, you're right, the defense for Colorado State, they shut down a while. I mean, like, outside that last drive, like, in the fourth quarter, obviously that was the only touchdown they have Wyoming had in the game. They went a nice 7-play drive. They actually had Overstreet score on the ground and ran a little bit. There's also the face mask penalty that helped them as well, that 15 yards. Defense did all they could. It's just they finally had enough and couldn't get it done. Like, not to blame the Rams defense, but look at the second half. They hold them to a field goal, punt on 3 plays, fumble 2 plays, and then that 7-play touchdown drive. So they did what they wanted to, and then the one last drive they had, 4th and 7, or why do they punt, man? Why not go for it? I don't know. I know they're deep, but you're down. I don't know, whatever. Maybe that's probably extreme to go for it, but when you got 4 minutes left, maybe go for it in that 4th and 7 deep in your own territory.
Well, I mean, you know, the other thing that I think you're kind of overlooking a little bit, which enabled Wyoming to kind of turn things around a little bit. Josh Allen wasn't great throwing the football again in this game. He was only 10 of 20.
Nope.
But you saw what they did with him in the fourth quarter, especially, right?
Run the ball.
They basically gave it to him and told him to run.
Win the game for us? Yeah, let's do that. Let's win the game for me, folks.
And this is, and that's the kind of thing that, you know, I'm not, I don't talk about it directly when I talk about the raw tools that Allen has. But, you know, you've got a guy who's big and fast and strong. And essentially what they were doing is they were just running quarterback draws, or, you know, the kind of, you know, like, I don't want to call it a rollout. I forget what exactly you call
like
it.
Like a veer, kind of a veer a little bit.
Yeah, the kind of thing that you would see in Tecmo Super Bowl or something like that, where I always played with the Denver Broncos back in the day because John Elway had that play in the Denver playbook. Where you just, you know, you have a couple of lead blockers and you're just running around the right side. And that's essentially what they did in the fourth quarter to convert a couple of really crucial plays. And then, you know, between that and Overstreet, you know, not necessarily breaking big runs, but being able to convert when they needed him to, you know, keep them on schedule. That was really the big difference in this game.
There's that too. It's, I don't know, it just seemed to... I know the Wyoming, I said it before, but Wyoming defense is good, but I would just expect to put more from Nick Stevens. Again, he only threw the ball 14 times. Like, he should be throwing more than that. I understand your points are being made. Like, they're running the ball well. Wyoming's defense couldn't slow down the rush attack from Dawkins, but you got there more than 14 times.
I feel like, other than the weather, this game played out more or less like I thought it would.
I thought there'd be more points, though. I thought 29 was a bit low. But again, that could be the snow a little bit, and the rain, mm-hmm. and the wind, and that first, and, oh, the whole game, actually. But this puts, we'll get to one more game. We'll get to the divisional stuff. We have one final game. We got your game, Fresno State, BYU.
We have a couple more games.
Oh, we do? Crap, we got to hurry up things. I told Eli we'd be ready for basketball in a minute. What's the other games I'm missing here? I need to pull up my schedule again.
do we really need to talk about San Diego State, San Jose State that much?
For about 10 seconds. What was the final score, Matt?
It was 52-7. They ran for 554 yards. They ran for about 8 yards a carry.
Good.
Rashad Penny had 234 yards on 20 carries and 3 touchdowns. Juwan Washington had his biggest game of the year, 134 yards and 2 touchdowns. And they even got the redshirt freshman Chase Jasmine into the mix. You're going to be seeing a lot more of him, I would assume, down the stretch a little bit. He ran for 82 yards and a score. You know, Christian Chapman threw the ball 5 times, but he threw it for 77 yards and a score.
Ryan Agnew appearance.
It was basically almost exactly what you would expect of this game. It was pretty ugly. Almost
71 rushing attempts.
Yeah, I forget the exact tweet, but they were saying, like, in the second half, they had, like, the second string offensive line in. They had the third and fourth string running backs. They had, you know, the third and fourth string receivers. And it just didn't matter. San Jose State couldn't stop them.
We do need to give a little bit of credit to Frank Ginda, who had 16 tackles and 2.5 TFLs.
That's true.
And a sack. And then also 16 from Tyson Parker. But I think that's all we need to say about this game. This is the second time also Penny had 230-plus yards on the ground.
You came close to your prediction.
250. I said 250. I was right there.
Yeah. You're almost, yeah.
Almost. It's so close. And also, real quick, Penny has 3,000 career rushing yards, so that's pretty good, too.
All right, last game.
Now we're ready for your Fresno State BYU matchup. I do like did you like the tweet Dr. Saturday sent out saying after the victory they're in first place still in the West Division?
It's like, well, I would kind of hope so.
Yeah, unless somehow – I know BYU's playing half the conference, but still – and then there was that interception to end the game, which I think that was appropriate for the best play of the week, the interception at midfield to clinch bowl eligibility. So I put that number one.
That was a fumble, actually, but yeah.
Oh, it was? The one that went to midfield? Or that?
Yeah, it was a fumble forced by Jeffrey Allison and picked up by Mike Bell.
Oh, I thought it was a pass. Like when BYU was in their end zone and they kind of threw it?
Nope.
That was a fumble? How did I miss? Okay.
Are you talking about the interception that was called back by a penalty?
Maybe that's what it was. Crap, did I have the wrong play for number one?
You might, yeah.
I mean, just on the pick, I'm like, that looks pretty cool. That's a good play, end of the game.
It wasn't a perfect game for the Bulldogs. Like,
it was too close for me.
I mean, for me, watching the game, it seemed very similar to last week's game against UNLV, where, you know, BYU was able to make a few plays. They weren't quite as consistent in driving the football. They, you know, they had a few, you know, their scoring drives essentially in the middle of the game were kind of the equivalent of UNLV's first quarter last week. But I think what this game ultimately came down to was the fact that the secondary, you know, they didn't have any interceptions, but they came very close a few times. You know, there was, I'm trying to remember, you know, Jaren Bryant obviously had the one that was called back, the pick six that was called back by, I believe it was a pass interference penalty or something like that. You know, that was one, but, you know, they had two or three more throws from not only Tanner Mangum, but Bo Hodge that were very close to being picked off. And so to me, it seemed like only a matter of time before they got back to creating more turnovers. So even though they only had the one, which more or less clinched the victory for the Bulldogs, you know, you could see that the secondary was basically back in form, especially once Mangum left. Like, I don't know if we have any kind of update on his status.
Yeah, right, he's out for the year, Achilles injury. Achilles, so he's not,
yeah.
So he's out for the last, when they play UNLV in Hawaii, he's done.
Yeah, because if you didn't see it, he basically went down. There was no contact whatsoever.
Well, twice. Wasn't the first quarter or first half a hit, though, I think?
Yeah, the first time he got hit pretty hard, and he came out for a little bit before coming back. But then the Achilles thing, like, there was nobody around him. He just fell.
Ouch.
But, you know, they did have a little bit of trouble stopping Matt Bushman, who had his best game of the year for BYU, 9 catches on 10 targets for 97 yards. But, I mean, for the most part, you know, the defense kind of played the game that I expected them to. Like, they didn't give up that many big plays. The offense had, you know, some fits and starts. You know, McMarion had a really excellent 50-yard strike to Jameer Jordan that set up a score. But mostly, you know, he didn't make any bad decisions, I don't think. You know, he didn't have that many big plays, but he was mostly taking what the defense was giving to him.
Mm-hmm, yeah, 14 to 20, not pretty efficient there.
Yeah, he didn't have the same problem that Mangum and Hodge did, where, you know, he was throwing passes that could be picked off. So I think that's a credit to him. It wasn't the most exciting offensive performance outside of those couple of big plays, but, you know, it got the job done. And they didn't forget about the running game in the fourth quarter this time around, where Josh Hokett, who ended up leading the team with 59 yards on the ground, was more or less the guy to put things away late. And so, yeah. You know, the offense still probably has some work to do. The defense is still among the best in the conference. Don't let anybody tell you otherwise.
Are they top 30 defense, Matt?
I kind of think they are, yeah. I mean, they're certainly playing like it, like by yards per play. I think they're in the top 20 at this point. But
they are number 20 at 479.
Yeah. So, you know, they're bowl eligible. And, you know, I think BYU may have shot themselves in the foot a little bit, because there was the last fourth down play that they had. It was fourth and one, I believe, where they were trying to... I'm trying to look this up so I make sure I have it correct. It was... What was it? It was fourth and one at the Fresno State 26.
Mm-hmm.
And they let Hodge throw.
Throwing. That's cute.
And
not to Matt Bushman as well.
Yeah, and so I have no idea why they did that, because to that point he was only 2 of 8. He ended up finishing 3 of 10, and the bulk of that yardage came on exactly one pass. But, you know, I'm not
when
complaining.
Squally Canada was running pretty well. He had, what, 80 yards, so why not give it to him? He only needs a yard. He's been doing reasonably well.
Exactly.
And then BYU gets one last chance. Like, I guess 7 seconds, not really, but I guess that's the play, the fumble. But still, it's like this game was closer than I thought it was. Like, it was, I kind of felt Fresno was mostly in control for the most part, because they're up 10-0, 10-3, 10-6. Like, it was one of those games where field goal for BYU, touchdown, or Fresno would match and then exceed at some point with the touchdown. And so, but that was the play right there, and they decided to throw when it was 20th, like I said, where they're at in the territory late in the game. Brett Allman's not a great kicker. He did okay, but, like, that's a run the ball. But the only quib I have, really, the Fresno offense, running game could have been a little bit better. That's about it. A little bit.
Yes and no. I mean, they were I didn't think they would have as much trouble running between the tackles as they did. But I think that's probably more of a credit to BYU's strength than it is to any kind of weakness on the Fresno State offensive line.
Yeah, I just like they had only long of nine. And so, like, they had two touchdowns. Mims and Hokett had over 100 yards, which is good. Like, the combination of those two guys is pretty well, but kind of wanted some bigger plays. But that's okay. They won. They're bowl eligible. Somebody's got to cut a check for six figures, $100K to Jeff Tedford. So there's that. One question somebody had really quick, like, how do we see the division race going into next week? I guess Fresno pretty much has it in the bag for the most part outside of what we mentioned versus UNLV. Because, again, Fresno can have two losses. They can be 5-2 and still win the division. They, for San Diego State to surpass them, they need Fresno has to lose twice. And if you go to next week really quick, we're going to wrap this up. I got to again talk to some hoops later with Eli. They go to Hawaii, at, to Wyoming, then host Boise State. Not those are some tough games a little bit, especially with travel, but they should be fine. The Mountain Division where it gets crazy, like you mentioned. Air Force technically still in the mix. 3-2. It's still Boise's to lose. They've been playing the best by far. Like in conference play, they've only given up, outside of Fresno State, 60 points allowed. Boise's only given up 70 points allowed. And they've been, and they scored the third most point, well, scoring 165, just okay, behind CSU and like Air Force and Utah State. So offense hasn't been there for Boise State outside of the Nevada game, but basically Boise just needs to win. That's what it comes down to, really. And next week they play really quick. They go to CSU, who's never beaten Boise State in conference. So it'll get interesting if Colorado State pulls the upset. Then there would be 4-1, well, depending on what Wyoming does, but a one-loss Boise State, two-loss CSU team, and a Wyoming team with one loss. And Wyoming, they already played Boise, right? They lost to them, correct?
They lost, yes.
So it's still pretty much Boise's hand. So it's a similar thing. So if Wyoming and Boise each have a loss, Boise needs to lose again. And they play Fresno, that's a possibility. So it's still kind of hard at this point to envision it not being Boise versus Fresno State.
I would agree, I think.
There's a few quirks, like, because Boise's lost to Air Force before, and they play CSU, so that's tough, but it's probably going to be Boise and Fresno. It just depends where, right? All right, anything else we need to add here? Are we good to go?
No, I think we're pretty much all set.
All right, thank you for listening to the show. Head over to MWR.com. Check out a new layout. Check out our top plays of the week. Bowl projections are in the books. By the time you hear this, I'm hoping. I have to hurry and get that done. And, yeah, if you want to write for us, shoot us a message. MWCWire on Twitter. You'll get the post tomorrow morning or whenever you read this because, yeah, we'd like you to be biased, right? We want more biased folks, correct?
Oh, yeah, always.
And we never say which direction. So if you're writing for a certain team, we know where you stand. But check out our show again. Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn. All that fun stuff. Give us a review, tell a couple friends, and yes, we'll say it again, we're biased against your team.